We are rolling. Isn't this exciting?
Yes, it is. We're in a car having an interview.
A car and an interview in America. What more can you ask for? Would you introduce yourself, please?
Hey, I am Vivi Brown.
Yeah, and I teased you. I said that you were imitating her, but I don't think that's possible somehow. This is really what I noticed is this is really an album that it's really an album. From the moment that I put it on, I realized it's not just a series of singles. You know, it shows a lot about you musically. And we'll get to what happened before this album. You know, I'll fill in for you. You know, people have already read you started at age 5 playing piano. But tell me some things that people, you know, because everybody's written the same, you know, kind of same 1, 2, 3, 4. Tell me some things that they might not know.
Well, I was in a punk band when I was 14 and called the Orgato Gazaimas. And I don't know. It was a very eclectic household, and I was just very intrigued by creativity. Like, it wasn't just being a lover of music. I just thought it was interesting that I could make something from nothing, which I thought was so cool. Like, one minute there's air, and the next minute there's a bundle of notes and something I'd made from inside. And I became obsessed with vinyl. I loved the texture of it and the aesthetic nature of it. It was like, when you listened to it, it was like foamy fluff came in the air, which was I loved. I'm such a chatterbox. A lot of the things, you know, I've said a lot already to people in interviews, but I was just intrigued by creativity.
So your parents owned the school that you went to in Northampton, and it was a pretty special school. So that must have been you and your family, right? The rest of your family. It must have been pretty interesting.
It was really cool. My parents worked really hard. They came from nothing, opened up this school, and I went to it, and my mum taught me religious education and history and English literature. My dad taught me PE, and it was cool because my parents were very artistic. They believed in artistic intelligence, and so everything at the school was to be creative. It was to be intelligent, but it was to be creative, even in maths, any subject. And so now as I'm older, I really am grateful for that. I think when I was younger, I didn't quite understand what they were doing, but now I think it's served me well because I respect creativity so much.
And it's well documented, but I think it's worth noting that you skipped university for music.
Yeah, I was going to be a corporate lawyer. That was my contingency plan. Complete polar opposites. Now I'm a rebel musician, comic writer, slash vintage customizer. So completely different from being a corporate lawyer. But yeah, I skip uni. But I read a lot of books. I love reading, and I don't believe that intelligence is institutionalized. So I read. Yeah, I had my twin brothers for the summer holidays. My parents went away, and they were bored out of their brains. So I said, come to the studio with me and you can hang out. I'll teach you about the studio and the mixing desk. And in the end, they sang on Quick Fix. And I thought it would be cool because it would pay for their university fees if they wanted to go, because the ASCAP that they would receive would probably they'd pay off their education fees if they decided they wanted to go to uni.
That's brilliant. So prior to this album, again, it's well written. You compose songs for other artists, and I don't want to go too deep there, but one of the things I'm interested in, do you think your credibility factor might be a little higher because you composed things that people knew about prior to you going out on your own?
You know, I never thought about it. I was just trying to buy my next pot of noodle because I was so broke. So I was always, at that point, my career was being strangled by my thoughts of, am I going to make it? So I kind of started writing for other people to survive. I never thought about the credibility, but I do think that if you have a hit record for somebody else, which I did have in Europe, people are more willing to trust when you have your own record out because you've done it before. So it helped as far as perception is concerned.
And digging into the music, which we're now going to start doing, but sort of, kind of, the sounds on the album are really fun and unique. And I know that you are a big gamer in a major way. So tell me a little bit about the sounds and how you made those.
Well, I love old school Nintendo games and Pac-Man, and I remember playing in the studio one time when we were having lunch, and just being intrigued by them, the melodies. They're like hidden symphonies with bleeps and synthesized sounds camouflaging these amazing constructive melodies. And I was like, whoa. So I took my dictaphone and recorded it and put it through in the studio and started getting interested in sampling these bleepy sounds and put them in the record in the right spaces.
And they're pretty cool. One of the things that was interesting to me is that out of everything that happened to you in LA, Crying Blood came out of it. And one of the things I read is that you said you would never compromise again.
Yeah, never. I was enlightened completely by the whole experience of Los Angeles and the discovery that true music has to be honest and sincere in order to connect with other people. We're all connected. That's what quantum physics tells us. But it has to come from a place of truth, otherwise it will be divided. So I would never compromise, ever. And I don't care about selling millions of records or getting loads of awards. For me, I just want to make true music. That's where I'm at the moment in my head.
It's a good place to be, and especially early on. I think one of the things I'm thinking about is that different songs are going to be different hits in different countries. Like, well, because Leave is very familiar in France due to its use in a commercial, Mais Oui, yeah. You know, and so you're helping a bank along and the bank's helping you along, which is a good thing. It's a good symbolic relationship. And then, you know, Crying Blood is popular, and you know, so Shark in the Water. So what do you think? New concept, different hits in different countries.
I don't know how or why, but I'm a girl that's been influenced by many things all over the world. My dad's Puerto Rican, my mum's Jamaican, my school was very multicultured. So maybe it's subconsciously all these little niggly things of people around the world in my music, and every little bit, every country relates to some little bit somehow. I don't know. But I never think too much about when I'm making a record. I just vomit music out.
and the music itself, you call it mashed potatoes, I heard, but the fact is the album is really about good pop songs produced and performed well. So tell me a little bit about the stories about producing the album. I mean, was there anything really, because you really did everything yourself. You played 90% of the instruments, and when you didn't, you were very directive, right?
Absolutely. I think it was a process of experimentation. I didn't have any money or big producers to work with, so I had to learn how to mix, how to engineer, how to use Logic, Pro Tools. So because I didn't have anyone to help me, I had to do it all myself, and it was fun. It was like laying the cake, looking at the cake, and then finding the spaces to put the Nintendo bits.
You're also, because Nintendo's not enough, there's some comic book graphic novel stuff going on, right?
Totally. I love comic books, and I'm doing a graphic novel called The City of Abacus.
Cool. And is we going to see that pretty soon?
Yes, in April it'll be available to buy on thecityofabacus.com, and it's my baby. I'm very excited about it.
And I'm just going to go on this for a second, but then there's the modeling thing, and one of the things I read is that you're proud to do it because you feel there's a need for a better mix of ethnicity in the fashion world.
Absolutely. In fashion, it's very stereotypical in a sense that all the black women in fashion, it's almost tokenism. And, you know, there needs to be more balance, and not just with black women, Chinese women, Japanese women, Latino women, all different sort of races need to reflect fashion because we all wear clothes. And I'm very flattered that, you know, when I get asked to do things like British Vogue, because I'm representing a side of beauty that I think is neglected sometimes.